And now, a presentation on the Mental Health News Radio Network. The Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show.
Ryan, that is a freaking awesome question.
You are the power, and you do not need anybody's permission.
He's the only guy that ever crawled out of a grave where people didn't go, oh, ah!
Don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just a ride.
You're a great interviewer. You're one of the best.
If this is the best God can do, I am not impressed.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. OuterLimitsRadio.com. I'm your host, Ryan. Tonight, our featured guest, who makes his fourth appearance, needs no introduction. There's not enough praise you can bestow upon Brandon Smith. This gentleman, critical thinking extraordinaire, he is a treasured asset to the freedom movement. He points out things that I think everyone knows, but then all of a sudden he puts it all in a clear, concise manner and ties all the dots together. He's just fantastic. I love his articles. I always share his writings with people. And I think that when you read his information, when you hear him speak, it's very empowering because you know he's just this major force in the freedom movement. I'm so glad he's working with us. Let's begin tonight's program. It is a great honor to once again welcome back to the show Brandon Smith, founder of Alt Market and passionate freedom advocate. You can learn more about him by going to his website at alt-market.us. I have to say that I read all of Brandon's articles. I think they are very fascinating, and he seems to be such a straightforward thinker. I think he's always three or four steps ahead of a lot of people. Mr. Smith, welcome back to our show.
Hey, it's great to be back.
Thank you. So, last time we spoke was in June of 2021, and you were seeing the world going to a very strange place. As of right now, do you think that the elites have more or less failed by trying to put people on the whole global COVID tyranny, and that they're looking for other things? Are their moves right now backup plans, or they were kind of hastily put together in order to continue the scaremongering of trying to bring the world under one global governance?
Yeah, I think my attitude is pretty much the same, or has been over the past year, and that's that the COVID agenda itself, the plan to put people on a vaccine passport system, the plan to keep mandates in place indefinitely, I think that plan has failed. I think it's pretty clear that it has failed. Wherever they were successful in places like China, for example, that's staying in place. The places where they were successful, the vaccine passports and the mandates, are those people are stuck with those. But that has not happened throughout most of the world. I think most of the world, they have failed to push that agenda through. So now we're on to Plan B, which seems to be Ukraine, Russia, and an economic world war is what looks like the next plan will be.
Okay. And reading some of your previous articles, there was plan for the Great Reset. And it seems that in this plan, the goal is to collapse various governments, including the U.S., and bring it under one authoritarian rule. When you look at the way the U.S. is, there are certain states that have not capitulated to this. But I do wonder if it is only a matter of time. If, you know, sometimes if you get a virus, and even if you have a small portion of the virus, does it ultimately infect the entire host? I mean, is the U.S. more or less, I mean, right now we have more freedom here than most people do. But are there even the states that resist the Great Reset, is there a probability that they will eventually get under that tyrannical control, because you have remnants of the population that are keeping the embers of tyranny alive?
Well, you know, I can only theorize on that, because I think a lot of people, you know, if you were to go back a couple of years before the pandemic event, you know, a lot of people used to tell me and argue with me about the idea that conservatives and conservative states, you know, red states, would capitulate right away, that they would just roll over as soon as tyranny was enforced, and that that conservatives were all talk, and that we wouldn't do anything when the time actually came. Well, that was proven quite wrong, actually. That was proven very wrong. And it's something I've been saying for a long time, is that no, people who are conservatives are generally pretty stalwart defenders of the Constitution. And you're not going to get these people to just submit because they don't care about the loss of comfort. They don't care about they're not going to roll over just because they want a few creature comforts, and they want the system to remain functional enough so they can, have their jet skis and their McMansions and all of that stuff. They're not going to roll over for that. They have higher principles than that, and people will fight back. And as soon as, not long after the pandemic started, we saw that with the red states. We saw, at least 20 red states immediately start to move to block the mandates. And, I think a lot of those people, they were wrong. They thought that conservatives would roll over, and we didn't. So, is there a line, is there a stage at which conservatives might capitulate? Is there a stage where it gets bad enough where conservatives give up? I don't know. But I think that line, I can only speak for myself, and that line for me, it doesn't exist. I'm not going to give up, and I think there are millions of people out there that are just like me.
Well, I will stand with you and stand by your side, because I feel exactly the same way. Never going to capitulate to this, because if once you capitulate, it's over. And I just such a shock with everything. There are people out there that listen to our show, Brendan, that would not identify themselves in any political party. They would identify themselves as just individuals who do about their own way. They do not wish to harm anyone else. They want to live free. For individuals who are not aligned to any particular party or ideology, does that put them at a disadvantage? Is it beneficial for people who are, say, for example, are partyless, or maybe in the Larkin Rose camp, who just don't believe in any relevancy of authority? Is it in their best interest for the time being to align to a particular political party in order to resist anything else out there and then pull away? I mean, what do you think is a better strategy at this point? Should individuals remain individuals, or should they align themselves with just groups that share the same vested interests of resisting this great reset for the time being?
I think it's important for Americans, especially right now, to start rallying around a set of principles, not necessarily a political party, but a set of principles that we need to sit down and say and define, this is what we all share, or this is what most of us, the majority of us, agree with the majority of these principles. And we need to rally around that, because what we're facing is a group of people. It's not just the globalists that we need to worry about. That's a small handful of people. The bigger problem, really, beyond the globalists, is the political left. And the political left is quickly aligning itself with everything that the globalists want. And leftists have this huge advantage over, conservative or freedom-minded types of people, which is that they sort of function on a collectivist, like a hive mind system. They're very quick to just blindly follow the gatekeepers within their culture. And this is obviously, it's a weakness, because they can be misled very easily, but it's also a strength, because they can form up mobs and organize very quickly, and they become a threat very quickly. And this is something that conservatives, freedom advocates, libertarians, whatever. There's so many different factions or groups of people within the liberty movement. This is something that we have a huge problem with, because we do not tend to organize very well. We're very bad at it, actually. because we're all individualists, you know, we tend to debate and argue with each other, you know, often, you know, constantly even. And, you know, that's that can be a strength because, you know, it prevents our groups from all forming together on one bad idea. You know, there's always going to be somebody who says, you know, like, you know, say, for instance, the whole Q thing. That was not a very, you know, that was not based in the foundation of reality, a lot of the Q stuff. So there were plenty of us who said, yeah, some of this stuff, it doesn't make sense. It's not realistic. It's not backed by evidence, so on and so forth. So it's good that there are people within the liberty movement who question everything and, you know, we debate with each other. But we need to find something that where we can all rally together and organize together and at least function as a unit at times in order to fight back against this stuff. Otherwise, we're all isolated. You have some people who are on the fence about some things and you have people who, you know, they only identify libertarian and they're for some reason, hostile against the word conservative. And I'll tell you what, I use the word conservative because anything, you know, to the right of Lenin is basically considered far right these days. So, you know, I just use the word conservative because I think it encompasses mostly what we stand for. I don't think you need to join the GOP or be a Republican in order to do that, though.
Really appreciate that answer, and I'm glad you brought that up, that, you know, the groups of people do seem to be aligned. And as far as the left goes, it's really strange, but I think that some of the underlying principles were like, okay, we know, let's just be pro-peace, let's, you know, be pro-civil liberties. I mean, these are ideas that were preached years ago, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's great to, you know, be more pro-civil liberty. I think it's great to be against war. But it's kind of strange how things happen, and I don't know if the same thing is going to happen with other political parties. Are they going to be co-opted? Are they going to change and transform? But when you look at this and you see, okay, there's one collective group of individuals within the nation that are enthusiastically embracing tyranny and totalitarianism, what is their fundamental weakness? Is there anything that can be done that will ultimately disrupt them and thwart their efforts? Is it going to be individuals standing up and, you know, touting and refuting what they believe in? Is there any way that you see this thing playing out where there is an end game where this collective psychosis that wants to enslave and entrap everyone ultimately gets defeated?
I think that the, in terms of the political left, I think their greatest weakness is when they go against someone who is completely uncompromising, when they have to face people who will refuse to compromise a single inch of territory to them, that's when they don't really know what to do, because the way that they operate is incrementally. Most of the time, sometimes they try to take everything at once, like they did with COVID. But generally, they try to take your freedoms, and they try to take the society and the country incrementally, piece by piece. And when people finally say, and I think this is happening right now, but when people finally say, you know what? No, I'm not going to compromise with you one inch, not one inch, ever again. Not one thing. I'm not going to give you one thing. And they'll cry and they'll scream and they'll whine about, you know, diplomacy and democracy and so on and so forth. They don't believe in any of that stuff. That's all of that stuff to them, that those are just tools to get what they want. You know, the idea that we have to constantly compromise with them and, you know, they just keep pushing the line forward an inch at a time. Well, you need to compromise with us on free speech. You need to compromise with us on gun rights. You need to compromise with us on, you know, what is taught to your kids in public school. They'll just keep pushing. They'll never sit down and say, okay, we have enough now, because it's never enough. They always want more. They're always going to want more. Even when they have everything, they'll want more. So at this point, I think I see a lot of conservatives and liberty-minded people saying, no, now we're not compromising with you anymore. In fact, we may just take back everything that we gave you in the past. And that's really the attitude you have to have to defeat these people. You have to be completely uncompromising.
I'm really glad you said that, because I've been telling my audience for a while that my son, who's not even 2 years old, and I were in a store, and some masked moron started yelling at us, and I was nice to her at first, and then I went nuts. And I think that the pure fact that I pushed back so hard, I think it was startling to her. I don't think she was expecting it. Like, it was kind of strange that she was responding, because she like never heard about it before. So I'm really glad you said that, to stick to your ground. And when it comes to looking at things, and you've talked about this collective group, the left, or the people who love tyranny, that they're never going to stop. They're never going to stop coming. They're never going to cease to come after our freedom. So if you see that happening, and you see that going ahead, what would you say would be maybe two probable likelihoods of the future of the United States? We talked about it before, about it being maybe a potential massive civil war, or one where there's going to be a secession. But what are you kind of leaning towards more now these days, when you see what's happened in the past year?
You know, it's hard to say, because conditions today do not necessarily reflect how people will react tomorrow. You know what I mean? People will change how they react according to the environment. And, you know, right now, I would say if they tried to institute everything in terms of an authoritarian system, you know, mandates, lockdowns, or just a, you know, straight, you know, one world order, a one-world economic system, one-world government, that sort of thing, then there would be immediate war, at least in the United States. I think at least half the country would not capitulate to that. They would not go along with it. The issue, I guess, would be, you know, economic decline is my biggest concern, and that's definitely happening right now. We are in the midst of an inflationary crisis right now. You know, I think most people, they can see it when they go into the grocery store. You know, I would say, you know, the average person's costs are, you know, hitting at this point maybe 30% above a year ago. In some cases, it's more than that. I've seen prices on some things that are double what they were a year ago. So it's... this sort of thing, you know, at least historically, it can tend to weaken a society and make them susceptible to the ideas of, you know, giving up freedoms in exchange for stability. And that's a real problem. You know, we saw that with Weimar Germany and the rise of the Third Reich. They would not have been able to, the Nazis would not have been able to gain so much power so quickly if Germany had not just come out of an inflationary disaster. I think that people would have been a little more reticent to go along with that, but the Nazis promised stability, and the Germans desperately wanted economic stability. So I hope that Americans have learned the lessons from history and won't you know, submit to that kind of system and give trade their freedoms for stability just because of the economy. It's hard to say how people will react, though, if things get bad enough.
I agree. I don't know, you know, how crazy things will get. Talking about Weimar Germany, you know, I bring up this gentleman's name a lot on our show, and that's Martin Armstrong, because I'm always curious about that, because I know Peter Schiff and Gerald have all been talking about, okay, well, you know, eventually the system's going to crash, and Peter Schiff's been talking a lot about a hyperinflationary depression, that they've just printed out too much money, and then Martin and some other people say, well, other countries have printed a ton of money, and they've gone into a tremendous amount of debt. And that didn't affect it. And he's, Martin's always saying that, okay, well, the U.S. currency has never been canceled. That's why we're never going to see a flat-out cancellation of the currency. But he said we are going to see inflation rise substantially, and we are going to see prices getting ridiculous. And, you know, we're bringing up these economic trends about where society is going. There recently, I don't know if this was, I imagine this is probably planned, but this whole, you know, a Roe versus Wade thing coming out, I wonder if that was meant, even if the globalists were smart enough to think about this, as a way of accelerating a migration where people are going to be entrenched more in states that share their values. If you look at various states and the reasons why people migrate, if you have three different options there, one is family, friends, two, you know, economic conditions, or three, social values, what do you think of those three as the main primary force that's driving people to migrate? And do you think either one of them stands alone for them people to start migrating rapidly at this point?
Well, I mean, during the COVID mandates, you know, I can speak for my area in particular, because my area in Montana has been a huge sort of migration area for people during the pandemic. And all the people that I've talked to, almost all of them, they migrated here, they relocated here because of social values and because they wanted to be in a place where they knew they were going to be relatively safe from, you know, any kind of authoritarian rule changes. And so, you know, yeah, I think principles, you know, political ideals and social ideals are the main reason why a lot of these people are relocating. It's not, you know, I'm not seeing any leftists coming out to Montana. That's one sort of rumor. That's one rumor that I keep seeing come up in the liberty movement. The lefties are coming in to take over, and they're going to take over our, you know, they're going to vote the way that they did where they came from, and so on and so forth. And there is zero evidence that these people are leftists moving in to take over. And the vast majority of people I've talked to are conservatives that just happen to have lived in a crappy state like Illinois or New York or California. You know, a lot of people forget that 25% of California votes conservative. So there's a lot of conservatives still in California that they just want to get out of there and they want to go to a better place. So, you know, don't be too quick to judge people who are moving into your area if you're in a red state. But yeah, I think principles and ideals, I think people want to be safe from tyranny, and they know what's happening. And if they have the money, they're moving to a place where, you know, it'll be a stronghold against that kind of authoritarianism.
Okay, and when it comes to making their move, I recently had a good talk with a gentleman named Edward Carswell. He's a prepper. He's been on our show before. And I was telling him I had this dream of going to Florida. He's like, don't go to Florida. I'm like, why? He said, because if there's a disaster there, even though they're very pro-freedom, you're stuck. You can't get out. And, you know, there's a lot of things that you have to look at your environment. So if you are examining doing an analysis of where people should move to, you know, political parties can change. Maybe ideologies can change, maybe not so quickly, but is that something that people should keep in mind as well? Should they keep in mind a state where they have some natural resources, where they could be away from the population, where there's other states to escape to? I mean, hypothetically speaking, if you were going to move right now and you were going to consider moving to another state, what would be your thoughts that would be going through your mind?
I think that just at least in terms of a place like Florida, I think it really depends on your overall plan. Florida, I mean, they've actually proven to be very strong in terms of, you know, conservative values, freedom values. They're one of the only states that's, you know, actively going after the leftist agenda in their public schools. That's a huge deal. I think DeSantis is doing a great job so far. You know, I don't put blind trust in any politician, but he's really doing a great job. So that's one factor that I think you need to consider is the state government, how are they acting? Are they putting their money where their mouth is? That's a big deal. However, tactically or strategically, you know, it depends on how bad things get. In Florida, one of the things I would consider is the fact that the population is so huge. It's a massive population in that state. And another thing is that it's completely flat. So, you know, I lived in Florida for 7 years when I was younger, and I can tell you it's completely flat. And it's also warm year-round. So if there was some kind of an economic collapse, then basically there's no high ground to go to. There's no terrain that kind of prevents people from just migrating back and forth, you know, searching for food or searching for places to loot, searching for easy targets, that sort of thing. And then the warm weather year-round, again, there's nothing stopping people from just roaming around freely all year-round looking for targets to loot. So that's a huge problem, I think, with Florida. You know, seasons can be good. You know, if you have a winter, that can slow people down a little bit, give you time to breathe and, you know, reassess where you're at and what you need to do. So I think, you know, for me personally, obviously I'm in Montana, which is, some people refer to as a readout state. It's a place where, you know, it can be built up as a stronghold. There's lots of changes in terrain. There can be harsh winters, so it can slow people down in the wintertime, which can be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on what you're trying to do. So I like the mountain states. I know on the East Coast, I know Tennessee tends to be very popular as a relocation state. Maine. Maine also tends to be a popular location for people to move to. So I think it depends on what you're trying to do. If I was in Florida, I would be near the coast, and I would have a boat, I think. I would have a boat-based preparedness plan.
Okay. Well, I'm really glad you brought that up. You made some excellent points about where people can relocate. All right, Brandon, we just have time for one last question, and I'm going to bring to your attention a date of significance. Alert, I found an article on AltMarket that reads, food shortages in 6 months. The globalists are telling us what happens next. So I guess when it rains, it pours. And I love this article that you wrote because, I mean, it seems that these psychopaths are showing us exactly what they're doing. It's almost as if they think people are so stupid that they're not responding. But it's crazy. And in addition to talking about the food shortages that they're planning, apparently there's going to be an imminent false flag attack where they're going to try to do something to shut down the grid. Can you please elaborate on a mix of those two articles, what you see happening, what people can do to actually prepare for something like that?
Yeah, I mean, this is a continuing pattern with the globalists. This is what they tend to do. I think I pointed out in the article that right before the crash of the credit crash of 2008 into 2009, that they were talking, I believe in early 2007 onward, they were talking about a credit crash among the bigger institutions. So the Bank for International Settlements, the IMF, the WEF, all of those groups were talking about a crash. And it was almost as if it's almost as if they're required by some kind of weird rule to tell us exactly what they're about to do before they do it, because these are the institutions that engineer economic disasters. They have all the power to do this. So why were they admitting to it? Why were they openly talking about it beforehand if they had the power to engineer all of this? And I don't know. My thinking is, for some reason, maybe they get a kick out of telling people what's going to happen before it happens, or maybe for some reason they feel they're required to let us know what's going to happen. But this is happening once again. This past year, they have continually started talking about food shortages, and the time frame for those food shortages has been presented as 3 to 6 months. I'd say probably 6 months is closer to what will really be, what will really happen. And, you know, the media itself, at least initially, has either ignored this, all of these institutions, I mean, dozens upon dozens of major institutions, from the IMF to the BIS to the World Bank to the UN, all of these institutions, globalist ones, are talking about major food shortages in the near term. The media has ignored this mostly. Some of the media has even tried to act as if there will be no food shortages, the same way they were acting as if inflation was transitory and that it would just go away. So there's the way the media is downplaying these announcements suggests to me that that's exactly what's going to happen, that the globalists are telling us what's going to happen, what the plan is next, and that in 6 months, at least 6 months, people need to be ready to weather that storm of food shortages. And that means prepping as soon as possible for all your necessities. And I think that food shortages, that doesn't necessarily mean that the grocery stores will be empty or that the grocery stores will be shut down, that sort of thing. What it will mean is much higher prices, even higher than they are now on most necessities, most items. That includes gas and other commodities, along with food. And, you know, there will be some empty shelves. And what they'll try to do is kind of spread out product across the stores to make it look like it's not quite as bad as it is. But you're going to see a lot of items just disappear off the shelves. And there will be infrequent stocking of items. So, for example, in my area, it seems like milk is really hard to get lately. And what happens is it's gone for 2 or 3 days, there's no milk. And then they'll get a huge influx of milk, and for a week, everything will be fine. And then for another 2 or 3 days, milk will be gone. So, you know, which is, that's unheard of, you know, two years ago. That's unheard of. You would just have milk all the time, every day. But with coming food shortages, that's what's going to happen, is there will be a lot of items you just won't be able to get, sometimes for days or maybe even weeks. So keep that in mind. It's when I talk about food shortages in that article, I'm not referring to some kind of Mad Max collapse. You know, what I'm talking about is a complete change in the way our freight system is operating and the supply chain is operating.
Mr. Brandon Smith, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. Again, Brandon is the founder and publisher of Alt Market, ALT-market.us. You can check out his articles. I love what he writes and his perspectives. You can also find a lot of his articles. They're also featured on LouRockwell.com and ZeroHedge.com. Mr. Smith, thank you for sharing your time and insight with us today.
Yeah, and thanks for having me again. I appreciate it.
Okay, everyone, that concludes today's edition of the Out of Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. Special thanks to our unbelievable guest, and special thanks, as always, to our virtues, Miss Carrie O'Connor, Miss Constance Dallas, and our associate producer, Jenny Lamisa. To learn more about the Out of Limits of Inner Truth, please go to our website at outoflimitsradio.com. And till the next time we meet, my friends, I wish upon you an abundance of peace, love, and beers. Take good care, and thank you so much for listening.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. our 24/7 U.S.-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out Pear.com today to learn more. P-A-I-R.com.